A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Football Ramble preview show sponsored by Bet365. My name is Marcus Speller. To my left is Jim Campbell.
Good day.
And further to my left is Luke Moore.
I'm Chandler from Friends.
You are not. Everybody, you've made it once again to the Ramble Bosom, and it's wonderful to have you here. We're going to talk about some football.
Yeah, and, come in.
And maybe some other things. Who knows? I'm going to start by saying that I just got a free almond croissant from Pret for being a brilliant bloke.
Very good.
I didn't even notice that happened.
Yeah. That it, Jim? Is that it?
No, well, it's your story, mate.
Yeah.
Well, I've just told it.
I think that's all of it.
I was waiting for a reaction. Yeah,
that's all of it.
Stunned silence, ladies and gentlemen.
Good for you, mate. As far as I understand it, the people who work in Pret are given a chance to dish out a certain amount of free items to people every so often.
Which when they recognise someone.
Which is why, apparently, they don't do a loyalty card system, which you'll find in other high street places
Costa. It's all a ruse.
Apparently
so.
To
make it look... To trick people like you into thinking they're a friendly corporation.
It's not at all. It's I went in there and got a free croissant.
So you're cock-a-hoop then, Marcus?
Big time.
Looking forward to this then.
Exactly. I've got a bye to the next round, which could be a smoked salmon sandwich.
Could be. Build it up. By the end of it, they give you your own brand.
Yeah. A three-course meal before that.
Yeah, and then I won't give out any freebies, and the joke will be on them. Gentlemen, the Carabao Cup has been happening this week.
Yes, it has.
It's been mildly enjoyable, not going to lie.
I enjoyed the Manchester United game last night, which I'm sure we'll come on to a bit later on.
Yeah, I'd like to go straight to the place where they're going to host the final, Wembley. Tottenham Hotspur. They beat Barnsley 1-0. But before we go to that, the big story coming out of Spurs HQ is that crap video that some Spurs fans did where they're face painted up, they've got Spurs kits on, and they're singing a tune to the Circle of Life, melody of Circle
Lion
of
King
Life.
Song.
It's an important move, this, because up until now, really, and Arsenal have had the monopoly on North London embarrassment, haven't they, on this sort of thing.
And broadly, West Ham have chipped in a few times
in
London.
They have. Not just Arsenal Fan TV, which we all know and love.
And we respect it. We do respect Arsenal Fan.
Do you respect Arsenal Fan TV, Marcus?
Well, you know, I
sounds like you do.
I like to deflect that question.
Jim, do you respect Arsenal Fan TV?
I respect a lot of things.
Gary Neville, do you respect Arsenal Fan TV? But I'm not just talking about Arsenal Fan TV. I'm talking about that band, The Away Boys, as well. They have a YouTube channel. And there was, to be fair, though, there was a fairly poor, it was really poor Spurs one a couple of years ago. And the reason I know about it is because a friend I used to work with was actually in it in the background eating some fried chicken outside White Hart Lane.
Was that the One Love one?
Yes, that's right. It was One Love. Well remembered. But the all-time great is the Aston Villa We Are The Champions.
Yeah.
And no one's ever going to get near that, I don't think. I don't think I'll see something as cringe as that in my lifetime.
It's becoming a genre now, isn't it? Because there's not a good one. There's not a good example of this.
It's hard to imagine how there would be a good one.
Exactly.
What would a good one consist of?
People might not remember the Aston Villa one. It was ahead of the League Cup final against Manchester United.
And a girl
we're
who...
We're the Villa, we're the Champions.
Yeah.
And she's been on X Factor, is
it
that
was,
right?
I think she came fourth or fifth on X Factor or
it's
something.
Not the only thing she was on, Jim, by the sounds of that. if they'd have won the League Cup, they wouldn't be the champion.
No,
they?
No.
They didn't. So it was wrong on many different levels. But this one, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, is worth seeing. Jim, did you just punch your mic in anger?
On purpose.
Damn it all!
I'm a clumsy man. Listeners have heard it.
The song "Circle of Life," of course, starts by name dropping the current Arsenal manager.
Yeah.
Mm.
Arsene Wenger, you know.
We're really getting into the weeds of this one, are we? We're going to do the whole thing. Strap yourselves in, everyone. Can we play it?
I'm just saying, Pete's not here, so we can't. But it's very poor. The main bloke in it is often seen holding a baby doll throughout.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, isn't it? It looks like it's going to become a horror film at some point. But wasn't it done, wasn't it made for one of the kids in the video? It's like a sort of gift to him in some bizarre way.
Is that right?
I think the sort of little boy in the video who's sort of ostensibly the star of it. I think it was perhaps a very misguided birthday present for him. So that's what you want for your birthday? Ridicule on the internet for probably a decade.
I think that's nice. I think you should all get off their backs.
I think I like it slightly more knowing
that. Yeah, I do as well.
But I feel for the kid because, you know, do you know what the internet's like? We've all seen the comments.
It's innocent, but it's also quite naive.
Yeah, that is a very generous way of putting it. And I assume that's your birthday gift to him.
Sorry, Dad, have you seen the internet before? Do you know what happens in this land?
Some of those accents, eh?
I know, right?
I think it's innocent fun and you're all being a bit harsh.
But you brought it up, mate.
Eh?
Yeah, you brought it up.
I can't remember that far back.
Listen, Marcus, if you're going to bring it up, don't be surprised when Jim and I come in with a hot take. Mm. All right?
Unless it's about Pret.
That's just how it works.
Oh, free arm and cross it, though, ladies.
That's Spurs, though, anyway. What's next?
Well, they're off to West Ham on the weekend, which is quite good because they're going to go away from home to the most intimidating stadium in all of London because it's called the London Stadium. But Spurs, they beat Barnsley in front of a modest crowd of 24,000. Obviously, it's worse because it's at Wembley Stadium, which holds nearly 90,000.
It looks more threadbare, doesn't it? But yeah, someone was pointing out that in this round of the League Cup last year, I believe they played Gillingham and the attendance was only slightly higher. I mean, it was pretty similar. So.
It wasn't rip-roaring stuff from Spurs. 1-0, they only won. Dele Alli got the goal. They didn't have a shot on target until the 62nd minute.
Well, I think this is a pretty interesting point because we've seen a lot of chat in the media so far this season, a lot of lazy chat, and mostly from the tabloid end of the spectrum about this particular, in quotes, jinx or curse, or this stuff that clearly, look, I'm only speaking on behalf of myself, but as a rational human being who's also a bit of a skeptic, obviously doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But what we are seeing here, I think, is two things. One, I think we're seeing a change of environment which is arguably causing Spurs to play slightly differently, okay, which therefore you could argue in a roundabout way is affecting them. The move to Wembley is affecting them in an on-pitch way. And secondly, I think we're actually seeing a little bit of a blueprint coming to the fore now of how to play against Spurs. I've mentioned this a few times already this season, just very quickly again. Jermaine Genius put this out on Match of the Day 2 a few weeks ago, saying Spurs find it hard to break teams down out wide because they no longer have Kyle Walker at their disposal and Danny Rose is injured. I think it will be improved when Serge Aurier can play. I know when he does.
Trippier was man of the match last night.
Yes, but they didn't show a huge amount of penetration. And I don't think Trippier is as good as Kyle Walker. I think Trippier is as good as probably a little bit better than people were giving him credit for last season. But that's just my opinion. Lots of people who watch Trippier a lot more than me have said that he's not at that level. Aurier will give them more in that position. But on the left, Ben Davis doesn't really have the pace or the legs. And I think we've seen Chelsea do it. We saw Barnsley have a decent amount of joy last night doing it. And we've seen other teams doing it. And Spurs really need to work out a way of being able to break teams down at home because it's going to be really important for their season. And you could argue the environment they'll face going away to West Ham this weekend could be exactly the same, but West Ham may not be able to get away with that because it's a bit of a cup final for them, isn't it, playing Spurs?
I think people have been taking Spurs seriously for a good few seasons now, and in terms of, you know, looking at them as actually, you know, they often talk about a title bid and people laugh at it, but now you know it looks like a more serious, realistic thing that, you know, they're in the Champions League and this is probably the best side Spurs have ever had in the Premier League, and it's testament to that teams are now setting up against them as they would against a Chelsea or a City or whatever. And I wonder, actually, you know, we made the point a couple of weeks ago, or you made the point, Luke, that you know, their home record last season was so good that it was always going to be difficult to replicate that, even if it's at Wembley. And I wonder, actually, do you think last season being the last season at White Hart Lane actually gave them a bit of a boost that's now being discounted given that it's obviously not there?
I don't see why not. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't have given them a boost. There's a great atmosphere around the club at home last season particularly. I just think the reason I went on record this saying I don't think Spurs will go near the title this season is because there's too many variables. I mean, they're moving to a new home, a temporary home. It's a different environment. I know plenty of people. A guy I used to work with very closely used to go to White Hart Lane every week, and he went to the Wembley games in the Champions League, and he said, we're going to struggle atmosphere-wise as well because it's very difficult to manufacture an atmosphere. Mm. I think the atmosphere has got a little bit better more recently at Wembley compared to the start of the season. But they've got a big challenge on their hands, especially now we're seeing what I think is a blueprint of how to play against Spurs at Wembley, and it'll be fascinating to see how they try and overcome it, because obviously Pochettino's a great coach and he should be able to think of a way of doing it.
They need to stick together. And if they did get to a cup final, it would be like a home tie. Wouldn't it?
It would literally be a home tie, hopefully by then. But the West Ham the game will be a curious one, because I've heard people potentially unfairly say that West Ham getting positive results against Spurs was the only thing that kept him in a job. And they have a big game against Spurs this weekend, and it's important to West Ham fans to beat Spurs. And I sort of understand why, because West Ham don't really have a realistic chance of winning anything big, and that's just how it is. So the first game of the weekend at the London Stadium will hopefully be a good one.
Well, you say they've not got a chance of winning anything big. They could win the Carabao Cup. They're in the fourth round. They are against Tottenham Hotspur.
They're playing Spurs.
Yeah. and they like to beat Spurs, don't they, Jim?
I saw some Spurs fans saying that they got a chance. West Ham have got a chance of doing the treble now. Then.
Well, cup competitions are very important for Spurs this season. If what Tim Sherwood said is anything to go by, he said if Spurs don't win a trophy this season,
as a rule,
he said if Spurs don't win a trophy this season, either league or the FA Cup, then Harry Kane could be off.
But the thing is, no one actually cares what Tim Sherwood thinks, and I don't think he knows that.
Has Tim Sherwood spotted sort of maybe an opportunity to make some money as an agent, and he's thinking, oh, if I start talking up potential clients,
Tim Sherwood
he's pitching for work.
Tim
for Harry
Sherwood
Kane
would
with
be
this.
A terrible agent.
Imagine it.
Yeah,
all bluster.
I didn't get your move, but I'm going to be on the backroom staff.
I've got a League One player. I want $1 billion for him.
Yeah. A woeful jib. He'd have a very woeful jib if he was that. West Ham have kept three successive clean sheets against Bolton, West Brom and Huddersfield. They've picked up 4 points from their last two matches. Bilic is probably thinking that that'll keep the Dildo brothers at bay for the moment.
Fingers crossed.
It's not a sacking you want, is it?
It certainly isn't, Jim. But yes, Marko Arnautovic had a good game in the cup against Bolton, I think it was.
They beat him 3-0.
Yes, Bilic said, I could have asked for more. I want him to do more with regards to Arnautovic. Of course, he got sent off against Southampton very stupidly, but he's back in the side now. And Bilic said, I like him as a player, which is just as well because he signed him. But then he gets happy with a few things and then he does what he wants, and I want him to push the ball. So obviously he gets a little bit complacent. Mm. And Bilic then explained this further by saying, I want him to keep molesting the opposition and never be happy in a positive way. I mean, can you be happy in a positive way if you keep molesting people?
Yeah, I mean, despite the strange phrasing, I think this is a fair sort of assessment of Arnautovic, because the most he's ever scored in the Premier League season is 12. And I know, you know, he's not an out-and-out goal scorer and that's not really what he's been signed for. But you do sense that there can be more from Marko Arnautovic, because he's quite a streaky player, isn't he? And when he's on those streaks, he's a very, very difficult player to play against. It's like a bustling nightmare, basically. And against Tottenham, West Ham will need him to be as direct and robust as possible.
And I just feel creative. Like he's...
Yeah, I mean, but when he's really on his game, he is a nightmare for defenders, but too often he's just sort of sulking around.
But he's got a bit of flair about him. But, I mean, if someone says to you they like you as a player and want to keep you to keep molesting the opposition.
Is that a touching tribute? Yeah, it's very good. He does molest the opposition, which is mostly, well, almost exclusively with his elbows.
Yes.
That's essentially it. And you know, his fee to go to West Ham, by the way, could rise to £25 million. Unlikely, given the way he's playing at the moment, but it could. I mean, it was an initial £20 million and it could go up to £25 million, which is an awful lot of money. Now, I know that transfer fees, are we've done that to death, but I agree with Jim. I don't think he's consistent enough, and you know they do need him to be very, very much on his game if they're going to get anything at the weekend.
Now's his time.
He's sort of kind of in a slightly derogatory, ironic way been compared to Zlatan Ibrahimovic before, and I wonder if that actually has gone to his head.
He thinks
he's that sort of player, which he is, like, you know, little Zlatan is what people say.
I don't think that is ironic. I think that's true.
But I think I wonder if, like, there's a sort of Zlatan-style situation going on where his idea of himself is incredibly inflated, and obviously with Zlatan he lives up to whatever he can imagine because he's a phenomenal player. But with Arnautovic, you know, it's like Zlatan without the work. You know, Zlatan's never been a lazy player, is he? He's always really, really bust the gut to maintain those standards.
I think looks-wise that there's a slight comparison there, but they're different type of players.
No, I think they are quite similar.
There's comparisons. Zlatan's front and centre, whereas Arnautovic tends to play slightly on the flank.
But I would argue that's because he's not good enough. If Arnautovic had the... I think there's an application situation there, as Jim just touched on. I think that's absolutely right. If I was a coach, I would be saying to Arnautovic, just watch Zlatan. He's that type of player. He's just not as good. And I personally think, Marcus, that he's pushed out wide a little bit more because he's just not as effective through the middle.
Do you think he's the Dirk Kuyt, then? The less... hard-working Dirk Cowan.
God, God, if you're the less hard-working Dirk Cowan, what's the point of you?
Everyone's a less hard-working Dirk Cowan. But, you know, the draw at the London Stadium this weekend is currently 3-1 with Bet365, so £10 will return £40, including stake.
Are we going to see a front three of Antonio Carroll and Javier Hernandez? He's delightful.
We might do.
Are they all fit?
Big man, small man, middle man.
I'm pretty sure I read earlier they are all fit.
Yeah, they are.
No, I don't believe it, though.
I see what you mean.
There's still time.
One of them will be fit by their own standards, perhaps. That's the best you can hope for.
There's a long way to go between now and Saturday if you're Andy Carroll.
Mm. I mean, that's Antonio and Carroll up front, that's like Shearer and Sutton.
Yeah,
up front for Blackburn.
But just with headers.
Yeah.
Just like a pair of seals, just bobbing that ball around.
Shearer and Sutton were all about the headers as well. Obviously, Shearer's got more
quality.
You're
being very generous. I took me a while to get on board with what you're saying.
You are giddy on your free croissant.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't you be, Jim? If you sort your act out, maybe you will get a free croissant. Okay, a little bit more hard work in Pret.
I'm pushed too far out wide, mate.
When it comes to Pret,
I just buy the bottles of water. I can't get near the counter.
When it comes to Pret, you are an Altovich and he is Latte.
I'm not going to deny that, ladies and gentlemen. Certainly not. Well, I think a front three involving them will be great fun. Oh, I say great fun. None of them have scored when they've all played up front together. So there we are. Liverpool lost to Leicester in the Cup, came in for more criticism, not least from the manager, who said he was fed up. He was sick of conceding stupid goals. I mean, that Slimani goal was an absolute beauty.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of parting of the Red Sea as he drove forward and smashed into the back of the net. But the first goal they conceded from Okazaki, that sort of the core of the spine of that side, the two centre backs, anybody who's meant to be protecting the back four, it just wasn't there, and they were punished.
Well, Leicester really seem to sort of have their number, don't they? They've beaten them a few times recently. I think if they win this game, that'll be the third Premier League home game in a row where they've beaten Liverpool. Mm. And obviously they beat them last night as well. So, I mean, it's almost as if Liverpool's frailties suit Leicester's strengths sort of just perfectly. Like, I think Vardy has, I think it's 5 in his last 3 Premier League matches against Liverpool, 2 braces at home. Like, I mean, that is...
But I wouldn't just confine that to Leicester. I mean, Liverpool struggling defensively, big time.
Absolutely, in general. But this suits Leicester's game so much. So they seem to just... As I say, have their number. They seem to just find Liverpool a very comfortable opponent.
Well,
if Liverpool
are
going to do anything, absolutely. I mean, actually, having played them so recently can only go in Klopp's favour, because he has to figure out how to beat a team like this, because this is where they're coming unstuck, isn't it?
Sure, but Jim, the wider point is that Liverpool are struggling defensively big time, and even if Leicester have got their number, loads of teams seem to have their number.
I'm going to hammer Liverpool in a minute, so just ahead of that, before Jim gets absolute pelters for the rest of the week, Liverpool did smash Leicester at Anfield last season. They beat them like 4-1.
Yeah, I know, but
he did
still. Yeah, they're still...
But the point is, they haven't got their number, have they?
No. I don't know. I think that's a decent amount of wins. Like, you know, 3...
Okay, but they've literally been beaten at 4-1 by them last season.
All right,
so
okay.
They haven't got their number. I'm saving you, mate, for the abuse. That's
all
what
right.
I'm doing.
Send it to Pete.
But listen, Liverpool... This has become an endemic for Liverpool. I mean, the reason you know it's become an endemic and it's becoming a whole sort of narrative, you know, partly fuelled by us and by other people in the media and stuff, is because they've only actually lost a few games since about February in total. They haven't lost a huge amount of games, but what they haven't been able to do is keep clean sheets. I mean, they've kept 2, I think, in all competitions this season. That's it. And it's getting to the point now, I think, where they have to score 2 or 3 goals to win a game. And if you look at the type of team they come unstuck against, it's just not good enough, you know. And Liverpool, a team, is so big and a club who is so sort of monumental in terms of size that they judge themselves because on this league title thing, because they haven't won the league title for such a long time. And there's talk out there that Jurgen Klopp's record is almost very, very, very similar to Brendan Rodgers's, which apparently wasn't good enough. Now, I know they're on a bit of a poor run when Rodgers left, but Klopp can come out and say this sort of stuff, but he's the one who's got to sort it out. Mm. I mean, if he comes out and says, "I'm sick of us conceding goals like we concede," well, what are you working on then? You've either not got the coaching properly done and the training ground's not been utilised effectively, or you've not got the players that you want. You had a chance to get the players and you didn't do it. So clearly, I don't have a huge amount of truck for managers saying that sort of stuff when it's actually up to them to sort it out.
Well, it's such a clear Achilles heel, isn't it? And all he's doing is sort of addressing the fact that he hasn't been able to address it. So, you know, people know what to target with Liverpool this early into the season, and it's a problem that's been there since he's taken over, really.
But Marcus, what do you think, when it comes to the type of goals that Liverpool concede, do you think they're... majority of them are down to individual errors, or do you think it's like an organisational general thing?
Well, it's clearly they struggle at the back. They're just a bit soft at the core, and I think that if you're going to play a swashbuckling style, you need to dominate possession more, which they don't. They need to be more dominant going forward and kind of defend from the front, which I think sometimes they do. But if you're going to be more like a unit, you can't be picked apart that easily. When they lost against Manchester City, yeah, they had a sending off. But the manner of the defeat was very disappointing.
Yeah.
And since beating Arsenal, they haven't won a match, losing two, drawing two in September, compared to winning four out of five in August. And it all tends to go wrong when Mane's not there, which I know that might be a slightly churlish point. Obviously, when he was out for the Africa Cup of Nations last time, it went wrong. But they've been poor without
him. Well, it's true, isn't it? It's true.
And I wonder if he kind of harasses people up the field a bit more, it maybe gives other players a bit of encouragement to do so. I don't know, but they are soft at the core a little bit.
We'd expect them to play a stronger team at the weekend, though.
I mean, you would. I mean, Coutinho got a run out, and he was good in the first half. He was probably Liverpool's best player, and Klopp took him off because preserving
well, he's
his
not
energy
played a lot of football,
and building
yeah.
him back up and so yeah. on and so forth. But when you read the stats, as you say, you know, somebody worked out that Klopp's win record is inferior to that of David Moyes' 9 months at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Some of these things can be a little bit
that's naughty, isn't it?
It is a bit naughty, but the fact remains is that Jurgen Klopp he isn't winning as many games as he would like. Bearing in mind that last season Klopp was kind of giving a little wink and a smile, saying, "Oh, you know, we don't talk about the title down here," but we do
talk about this game here and talk about how Leicester have beaten Liverpool there and beat them 2-0. So on paper, it looks like a fairly comprehensive win. Mm-hmm. But we're only talking about this because Liverpool are in a bit of a dodgy run defensively.
Yeah.
And you would expect probably six or seven of those Liverpool players who played midweek to not play this weekend. Mm. Certainly to not start this weekend.
Yeah.
So you could be looking at a different kettle of fish come
Saturday
tea time as well.
But that all stems from the manager saying that he was sick of conceding stupid goals.
Klopp, this is the thing, another thing with Klopp, which I think is worth pointing out, is that he wears his heart on his sleeve to such a point where you're gonna start to invite pressure on yourself if you carry on doing it.
That invites criticism, and that also highlights what you're doing, which is why some managers deflect what they're doing, of course. And maybe Klopp is a victim of his own honesty there.
Yeah, I think he is.
Why it gives us an excuse, you know, because, yes, on another day you say, well, they're having a bit of a bad month. Teams can go through these patches. If the two Manchester clubs weren't so blisteringly good, and perhaps Manchester City have had a slightly kinder run-in, you know, they haven't played any of the big teams in the Premier League thus far off the top of my head, you could be talking of a little bit of a different situation. The fact of the matter is, though, Liverpool are not firing on as many cylinders as they would like, and their defence, which has come under lots of scrutiny since Klopp's been there, still looks a bit dodgy.
Well, if you like what you saw midweek and you fancy Leicester to win against Liverpool the weekend, like the draw in the West Ham Spurs game, this is also 3-1 with Bet365. So £10 on the Leicester win will return £40 again, including stake.
There we are. It's now time for some correspondence with Jim Campbell.
Yes, it is.
Are you ready, Jim?
So, I certainly am. You're going to be delighted, boys. We have a Dutch correspondent.
Lovely.
Long overdue, in my opinion.
Indeed. Right, so this is just... I'll just dive straight in. Hi, guys. I feel compelled to email after hearing you talk about the Van Gaal versus Koeman beef. Van Gaal has always been a special character dividing opinion in our country, so much so that one of our more prominent football journalists even went so far as to write a book about him to find out why he himself disliked Louis so much, titled Oh, Louis. That's a fascinating sort of examination of your own anger, isn't it? This journalist, Hugo Borst, has been telling us on national TV about these two fellow Dutchmen. Originally friends, they fell out when Koeman was coach at Ajax and Van Gaal director of football. At Ajax, Van Gaal would take a chair from his office and take a seat right next to the pitch when Koeman was taking training. Then he'd start applauding the players he himself liked most. In the end, Koeman told the board to sack one of them and they fired Van Gaal. As for their houses in Portugal, Koeman was already living in the Vale de Lobo resort in Portugal when Van Gaal built a house 100 metres from his place and made sure everything was just a bit bigger. The house, the pool, everything.
And his testicles.
And his testicles. His bare testicles in the evening, in a warm, balmy evening. Story goes that even their wives act like they don't see each other when accidentally meeting in the Algarve. In England, you've only seen Louis Van Gaal for a few years, but trust me, in all these years working in football over here in Holland and next door in Germany, we've had a lot of laughs and irritation from this man. He's as idiosyncratic as you'd think, and probably a bit more so. That is from Jasper van der Peppel.
I love Van Gaal even more after him.
Absolutely, yeah. This is nice, just a bit of context on the old Garve thing from Monday's show.
And it's that is incredibly Dutch, that story, because someone bloke writes a book trying to figure out why he hates somebody so much. I mean, that's glorious in itself. Yeah. And also, if you dislike someone and you know they dislike you, why on earth would you then build your holiday home right next to them? You'd be like, oh, that guy's there. I'll go the other side of town. Or I'll go to another country. I'll go right next door.
You simply must enjoy antagonising a person.
How close can I get to him?
It's a big wide world out there, but that's the spot for me.
Yeah. So he won't be happy until he's teabanging him against his will.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Simon from Canada here. Hello, Simon. I've checked this story out. It sounds like a lie at first, but it's real. Just thought I'd contribute to the ongoing saga that is John Hartson's relationship with thigh muscles. In February this year, he was asked on a radio phone-in show about his opinion on Beyoncé's latest full-length album, Lemonade, baffling in itself. And to call his response baffling would be selling it short. You wanted the truth? I'm going to give you the truth. I just love Beyoncé. I love her thighs. When she gets her heels on and she dances around that stage and her thighs are bouncing and muscly, it's fantastic. Hartson, suddenly remembering that he's a married father of five, adds, I love a girl with some meaty thighs on them, like my wife.
Oh my goodness.
The real question here is the ramble brave enough to make John Hartson's Thigh Watch a regular recurring segment? That's from Simon Barney. I think we are. If anyone else has any thigh news John Hartson.
The only being that John Hartson's well known on the ramble over the years for his calves, not his thighs. I mean, his calves were the ones that were causing all the
Luke,
headlines.
Look, we're moving on up.
We are indeed.
We've got some weird celebrity spots as well, celebrity sort of, you know, wheeling out ofs.
So unveilings.
Unveilings, you know, it's a complex language, isn't it? Hi, chaps. I'm a Coventry fan and was a season ticket holder during our days at Highfield Road. During one half-time break, we were presented with none other than Mr. Motivator. Suitably lycra-clad, he encouraged the crowd to join him in a spot of aerobics. Needless to say, this was less than successful. That's from Andrew Law. If you are from outside the UK, do Google Mr. Motivator. It's a bizarre sight from our youth.
I think that Mr. Motivator would have been a little confused because he would have looked at a lot of football fans and gone, well, they're wearing sportswear. They'll be up for this.
For some reason in my mind, I thought that Mr. Motivator was a Leicester fan. I don't know where I got that from. I might just be barking up the wrong tree.
Actually, funnily enough, I have another email, which might be where the confusion has arisen.
I've not seen this email.
Because there has been a similarly bizarre unveiling at Leicester.
Okay.
So, hi all, I remember years ago, Mark Morrison of Return of the Mac fame being paraded on the pitch at Fulham Street.
Well, he's definitely from Leicester.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Admittedly, Morrison had links with Leicester, so not entirely odd, but I seem to remember the unveiling coming quite a few years after his brief fame. He was handed a mic on the pitch and proudly announced, it was Return of the Mac, now it's Return of the Leicester. Needless to say, it was a tumbleweed moment.
I think we might have covered that before on the show.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Did he get a lookalike to do it like he did his community service? I probably made that joke back in 2009 as well.
Who knows?
Did he do that?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
He did do that. So I've got one more. I think this is a contender for the strangest one of these celebrity unveilings.
So far, I'm
laying down the gauntlet to people. Ola Ramble, as a Norwich fan, I prefer not to talk about letting famous fans on the pitch at halftime, let's be avenue, but my hometown Peterborough United once had Iron Mike Tyson after his week-long holiday to Peterborough in 2010. He had a lovely old time having a Marks & Spencer's meal deal for lunch every day, but his highlight was parading around London Road in his posh shirt at halftime. That's from Luke Manning. Apparently Tyson was there to do a sort of like evening weird style.
Yeah, he did like a book tour type thing.
Yeah.
I think he was unveiled at a number of different grounds. But, you know, Luke's the first guy to get in touch, so Peterborough can claim him.
Yeah, Peterborough claim
works for me.
Mike.
That is extraordinary.
Well, listen, show up to footballrabble.com for any more of that sort of nonsense.
That's the place to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, we will talk about Arsenal and Southampton after this.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was like the parting of the Red Sea. People just went, whoop.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble Preview Show, everybody. Arsenal hammered Doncaster 1-0 in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah, I imagine when those fans got back to Doncaster, it's probably not even there anymore. Yeah. Just fallen into a big sinkhole. Such was the shellacking.
Yeah. Oh, of course, Darren Ferguson, son of Sir Alex, was he is the manager of Doncaster. And Big Alec was in the crowd, given one of the best seats in town and reportedly invited by Arsene Wenger.
I like that.
They're quite pally, though, aren't they, these days?
I like that, yeah. I think they should be. Yeah. After being so fiercely in competition a number of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was always marked by a grudging sort of respect and admiration, wasn't it?
I think it was so long ago that Wenger was truly a competitor of Ferguson's.
Well, quite, yeah.
I mean, now Ferguson's no longer in the game. He doesn't see him as a threat.
Yeah, but even before then, even in his last sort of five or 6 years, you know what I'm saying, bruv, Nick.
I do.
But yeah, Wenger and Fergie shared a friendly moment before the match. I won't go into any more detail.
Well, I mean, there's nothing... I mean,
it's salacious.
It's hard to think of anything more undignified than two pensioners actually fighting each other, isn't it?
Yeah, pre-match.
I said friendly.
That's what I'm saying, so it's good to see.
A friendly arm wrestle.
Yeah. And big Jackie Wilshere got his first start at the Emirates.
He did, played very well too, which is nice to see. It's encouraging from Jack.
Mm-hmm. Found his level.
Uh-huh. Do you think he'll start for England in Russia?
If Gareth has his way.
Do you think he'll start for Palace in February?
Yeah, that's more likely, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends, really, doesn't it, if Hodgson's still there or not. But we think he probably will be. Wilshere, I mean, he played well at home in the Cup against Doncaster. Yes, it's encouraging. You don't want to poo-poo that. But, Jim, do you see his long-term future at Arsenal?
Probably not, realistically. I think, as
I have just
season,
asked you how long a piece of string is there, by the way, and I appreciate that.
But, I mean, you know, he didn't really pull up any trees at Bournemouth last year, and he's going to have to fight very hard to get into this team. But you know what? You know what a season's like. Players get injured, particularly at Arsenal, so there will absolutely come a period where we need Jack Wilshere to be in the first team, and him getting a confidence-boosting performance under his belt can only be a good thing for that.
Indeed, yeah. Well, there was a couple of youth prospects in that Arsenal side. Reece Nelson is one.
Jack Wilshere?
And another one as well. Yeah, Thierry Henry even tweeted wishing him and a fellow youngsters well on the night. Reece Nelson, one to watch.
He's
perhaps
very highly regarded, I think. Yeah, a lot of people talking about him. The Jack Wilshere thing is almost a curious one because he must be 25 now?
25,
and it's hard to think of a way he can force his way into that regular first team, because I didn't see... There are going to be people out there who watched him a lot more closely than me at Bournemouth last season, but I saw him a bit, and I don't think... As I said to Jim earlier, actually, just before we came on, the damning him with faint praise, I mean, he slotted in Bournemouth okay. I mean, he looked all right. He looked a bit part of the furniture there, really, in terms of his ability and his management of the game and all that sort of stuff. So is he really going to be a player that can, in such an important position as well, that Arsenal can really hang their hat on for what they want to achieve? My answer to that is that I don't think he is, despite flashes of brilliance in the not too distant past. But for me, there's no way he's a player. I've not seen anything over the last couple of years which says they can rely on him. I don't think anything.
I think the hope is that he's, and I don't know whether this is naive or not, is that, you know, he's it's taking him a long time to get back to his best after injury, which hopefully he will be able to recover. But we were talking before about Gareth Barry, Michael Carrick, these sort of players being underrated, those players that do the simple things very well. I think that is the platform he needs to build from, because Arsenal don't have a huge amount of players that do that sort of role. So he's quite unique in the squad in that sense. So that's what he has to bring.
Is he still on the snouts?
I think, but that's a fair question, because when you're saying about Carrick and Barry, two very different characters to Jack Wilshere.
Well, absolutely. And this is the problem, isn't it?
But Jim, you've stumbled upon something there, I think, because Jack Wilshere's definitely got the skills to be able to do that type of role. It's just whether he's got the positional discipline and the football brain to be able to
I think his football brain is very, very good. I think we were talking about this earlier, but one of the strange things about Wilshere is his career has been defined by some real sort of man-of-the-match performances, a particularly strong one against Barcelona a long, long time ago now. So what he does have the ability to take the game by the scruff of the neck, but now, at 25, with a year to go on his contract, at the biggest club he's likely to be able to be at in the near future at least, if he can't take it seriously now, then he'll never be able to, will he?
But what you just said there is a direct contradiction to what you just said. I mean, if you want him to adapt his game and play this Carrick, get Barry, look after the ball, Danny Drinkwater, sensible pass type role, the last thing you want to be doing is him taking the game by the scruff of the neck. You want him to be doing sensible things and keeping the ball and looking after it.
I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive, though. I think, you know, sometimes that's what Arsenal's game in particular needs, is some smart sort of stewarding of a midfield to actually calm the game down and get it back on side so that Arsenal can control it. And I think that Wilshere has the ability to do that. And that's what we need from him if he's going to get back in this team.
He's only got the ability to keep the ball.
The ability, definite. No question about that. Providing he's still got the ability he had and he's not been laid so low by injury that he's struggling. I personally don't think he's got the nous, personally.
Wenger said recently that what he needs to get back is in quote, little bursts. He was very good at that, just sort of maybe, you know, nicking the ball around someone, making a very sort of quick stride forward and then you know, creating
releasing
something.
Ball,
and
we've
not really seen that from him so much. So hopefully that's not deserted him forever and he's on the way back to finding it. But again, like, I think it's a very Arsenal position that I can't help but take, that every Arsenal fan still wants him to succeed, but I don't know whether we're just kidding ourselves.
I wonder if he's still good enough to play for Arsenal, perhaps, but if he wants to play some lovely football and enjoy himself, then come down to Fulham.
Come down to exactly.
Be perfect for him.
But Arsenal are at West Brom Monday night, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, and those baggies are 7-1 with Bet365 to pull off a shock and win the game, I mean. So £10 will return £60 including stake. Sorry, £80 including stake, excuse me.
Worth a flutter. Speaking of sons of famous managers, Nigel Clough was loving the fact Burton had scored against Manchester United and said with a smile, it was lovely for our supporters to get a goal. Most of them would have never dreamt that Burton Albion would ever score at Old Trafford. And he's right, isn't he?
Yeah, I heard an interview with Nigel Clough a couple of days ago and he seemed like he was enjoying his time down Burton. He's done such a good job there. I mean, stewarded them to their highest ever league finish. This is a team who, less than 20 years ago, were a non-league team. I mean, I don't even think they were Conference North then. You know, or it would be Conference North or Conference South, I forget which one, but I think it's Conference North. I think they were a division below that even a number of years ago. So for them to be in the Championship and to get a goal at Old Trafford, look, the game itself, I watched it and United shepherded the game really well and did well. And do you know what? Something that really stuck with me about that game is that Man United made, I think, 9 changes and they still had a very strong team.
Yeah, they did.
Their team was still very, very strong.
Yeah. I mean, Nigel Clough, obviously very pleased that his Burton side got a consolation goal at Manchester United. What would his father make of him being very pleased getting a consolation goal after a hammering at Manchester United?
Can he do anything without anyone asking what his father's going to do?
Context wasn't big on Brian Clough's priority.
No, no.
I think Burton are the first team to score at Old Trafford this season.
They are, right? Yeah.
That's brilliant.
That's another reason why Clough was well pleased with himself.
Yeah, of course.
Well, why not?
Lovely
evening. Imagine
work.
If no other team scores there for the rest of the season.
what a
pub quiz question that'll be.
I heard him cry last goal the winner when they went in.
Next goal wins because it's dinner time.
Oh, man. Well, Southampton host Manchester United on the weekend. Club captain Stephen Davis, Southampton, of course, said he wants a hostile atmosphere at St Mary's to make it as difficult as possible.
Good luck
for Mourinho's men, a hostile atmosphere.
Maybe those grey kits again.
Yeah, exactly. Get the grey kits on them.
One of the worst stadiums for atmosphere in the world.
Really? Is it? I mean, is that your biased opinion, or are you...
Move on.
Yeah.
No, I'm just being silly. Obviously, I'm kidding. But the best way that Southampton can generate a good atmosphere there is to actually start scoring some goals.
Yeah.
I mean, four home games this season, and they failed to score on 3 of them. And I think they failed to score in their final 3 games at home last season as well. And I think they've got a problem scoring goals. I think this has gone a little bit under the radar.
But they don't have a problem creating chances.
Well, quite. Exactly. But the 3 strikers they've got, they're 3 frontline strikers, as long as I'm not forgetting one, I don't think I am. Manolo Gagliardini, who started his career fairly well, but he's never been a big scorer of goal. He doesn't score in huge quantities. Shane Long, the same, you'd argue, can get a few here and there, can't he? But not a goal-scoring forward to build your attack around.
No.
And Charlie Austin, who has scored the majority of his goals at a lower level. And I like Charlie Austin. I think he's a great player.
He is, yeah.
But he also has really, really bad injury problems. So I don't know if it's on their radar. You'd hope it would be. They are going to struggle to score goals this season if they carry on like this. And that's clearly contributing to the lack of an atmosphere.
Against the United side, who've got 8 different goal scorers this season so far in the Premier League, which is the most. And
how embarrassing is it for a club for their captain to come out and say that they want a better atmosphere at their own ground?
You tell me, Luke.
No, well, it wouldn't happen at Pompey. I don't know.
A more hostile atmosphere because people in Southampton, they're good people.
Is that right?
They're not hostile. They're very friendly. Right? They're very warm.
To be fair, I actually think that's a man... You know, showing the qualities of a good captain. If that's what needs to happen, he's the one sticking his neck out to sort of perhaps, you know, annoy the fans a bit, but ultimately for the good of the team.
Do you know what I think he should do? I think he should come out in a load of leather, like Maximus Decimus Meridius in Gladiator, and start going, "Are you not entertained?"
When you said a load of leather, I panicked. I feared the worst.
A red herring. I'm not Pete Donaldson. I am not Pete Donaldson.
It's a Dutch weekend in the Elgar. I thought there was. I thought, my goodness. Mourinho said recently as well at Old Trafford, he sort of hinted that he wanted the crowd a bit more up for it. He often does this, Mourinho. He said this about the Chelsea supporters as well. I think Mourinho, Unless he's managing in the Colosseum back in ancient Rome, and there's lions and getting involved and so on. He's not really that happy with atmosphere.
Mourinho never stops talking about everything, though, does he?
That's true.
He was saying, wasn't he saying
the cup?
Yeah, wasn't he saying last night that the League Cup? He started off saying the League Cup shouldn't really be a thing anymore. He's thinking about it because he just remembered that he won it last season.
He's more well, yeah.
It was a major trophy this time last year.
Yeah, it was a part of a very, very respectable treble, apparently. And it will be again if he wins the damn thing.
Yeah.
But Mourinho, he did suggest that English football might be better without the League Cup, and it's like, no, the fitness of your players might be better.
Yeah, he was talking specifically about clubs in Europe, wasn't he? But
which is a fair comment.
They get a spare week, don't they? They get a bye for the second round, clubs in Europe, so they get a little bit of a rest anyway.
I can understand that there is a lot of football, and other leagues don't have the League Cup, the Carabao Cup.
Some of them do, but not all of them.
Not all of them do. There's usually the one domestic cup competition, which some countries it's not taken that seriously. The FA Cup is, of course, and I think that's to its massive credit. And then you have the league. And in England, we do have that extra cup competition. Same in Scotland. All the best leagues do it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Right.
I'm all for it.
Okay. Well,
it's great for us because it means we've got loads to talk about.
Exactly. I'm not wanting it to be thrown away. But
Jim, you couldn't play three games a week at your age.
I couldn't play one game a week at my age.
I was about to say, I don't think any of us could. Struggling.
Nigel Clough said about this, the League Cup is not a nuisance. We have an even squad and every one of the lads who played tonight thinks they should be in the first team. So it's obviously clearly very useful for him. But, look at Leicester, for example. They should be looking at maybe winning that this season.
Lots of teams should be.
Absolutely, but it does give a chance for clubs outside the traditionally powerful clubs a better chance of winning something, and that has to be remembered.
I love it. Nigel Clough's not going to see going away to Old Trafford and making a few quid on the road as a nuisance.
No, absolutely.
Huge amount of money
for
them.
He said that their budget the budget includes things like this.
But there's probably an ulterior motive to why Jose Mourinho is saying what he's saying. I don't know what it is, but he should be, if he's being completely honest, he should be looking at that a slightly different way, because as I've just said, they made 9 changes. So a handful of players at least there who won't be playing 90 minutes every Saturday are getting a chance to have a fairly competitive run out. I mean, Burton aren't world beaters, but they're a second tier team.
That's right.
They worked hard. They made it difficult at times for United, who I thought overall dominated the game and scored early, and that probably killed it. But it was still a good competitive run out that you're not going to be able to manufacture in a reserve team game or a bibs versus shirts game on the training.
Also, for players like Martial, players like Rashford, and to an extent Lingard as well, who are sort of not always starting but certainly contributing, keeping their momentum going is really, really important.
So, Rashford scored a great goal yesterday as well.
Played front and centre, Rashford. Normally he's out of the
well. Southampton and Man United are playing each other this weekend, of course, and the draw between them is 5-2 with Bet365, so £10 will return £35, including stake.
There we are.
Before I go on to the best bet with Bet365, I stumbled upon... sometimes with these sorts of things, you try and think of a way of weaving them in the running order, how we're going to link it together. Look, I'm just going to say it like this. It's about Kevin Keegan. And I'm reading it out.
Yes!
All right? Okay. This is a story...
Sit back and enjoy.
This is a story that not everyone listening may have heard, and apologies if you've already stumbled across it yourself on Twitter or whatever, but it's from Joey Barton talking about his time playing for Kevin Keegan and a particular incident. And I'll just read it in Joey's words. It's absolutely fantastic. Have you heard this, Marcus?
No.
No, okay, great.
Oh, I'm looking forward to Marcus
Have you
hearing
heard
it
this?
As much as I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Have you heard it, Jim?
No.
Okay, right. So this is Joey Barton speaking. We're 3-0 down and I've gone into the dressing room at half-time and the gaffer, Kevin Keegan, is having a go. I've just started taking my boots off and launching them, obviously not happy at all. I took my top off and my shorts and everything, and Keegan's going, whoa, what are you doing? I said, I've been sent off. He says, what? I said, I've been sent off. So Kevin Keegan's got no clue if I've been sent off or not, so he sends Derek Fazakerley to go and check. Derek Fazakerley comes back and says, yeah, Kevin, he's been sent off.
How had you missed that?
I must have missed that, Jeff.
I don't know... Or indeed care whether that's true or not.
Oh my goodness.
There we go. But do you want the best bet with
Bet365? I think we better.
As you guys well know, I was unceremoniously dumped out of the hot seat on Monday if you've missed it, then go back and listen. You all know what happened.
6 reasons why
I don't want to go back into it. I'm getting sort of Vietnam War style flashbacks about it. So this is a new man in the hot seat, and he goes by the name of James Short. James says, Gentlemen, what better way of making up for Luke's crushing humiliation last week than to double up on the Hornets to bounce back against Swansea?
Yes.
As such, I propose a Portuguese-themed double, which will no doubt leave the Premier League's two Portuguese managers as happy as Prostate Cancer UK when the bet inevitably comes in. So that's Watford to win away at Swansea and Man United to win away at Southampton. Here's hoping I'm duly enthroned in the hot seat this week. Well, you are, James. You're in the hot seat. Watford and Man United both to win is currently 4.26 to 1 on Bet365. So our £50 will return £263, including stake, all for Prostate Cancer UK, of course. You must be over the age of 18 to gamble, and do gamble responsibly. And for more information, go to gamblerware.co.uk. Now, I know a lot of you online, on Twitter particularly, which is mostly where we see the interaction with the show, are following the bets of the week very, very closely. So Watford and Man United to win is what we're going for. So give James your support, and let's hope we can raise a bit more money.
That's a nice bet, that.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think Watford might have got a good chance of bouncing back, and that's why it caught my eye.
Yeah, I've not lost the faith. You've made this guy up, haven't you?
No.
And you're going to unmask yourself if it comes in.
An anagram of Luke Moore. Good on you, James. Good luck. Best of luck.
Nice one.
It's a hot seat.
James.
Yeah. Nice one, Jamesy. Now let's look ahead to the weekend.
Yeah, a few more comments on Facebook looking ahead to the weekend. Charlie Morrison. God, that is a very squeaky chair. Sorry about that.
Is that you, is it?
Yeah. Charlie Morrison says, read David Seaman hating selfies. My cousin is doing some work on Dave's house at the moment, and he seems happy enough to pose for a quick selfie when I asked him the other day.
Yeah, because Dave can pop up, put his makeup on, he's got his selfie face on.
There you go.
Stick his ponytail on.
Yeah, because like when he was in New York City, I mean, he could be
a David Seaman lookalike.
It could be
a professional one to sit around the house so he can go out and do his own stuff.
As a smoke screen for the real David Seaman, so he doesn't have to do any selfies.
Yeah, it could be.
Go on.
Friend of the Ramble, Oliver Memories Bailey. Always involved in the Oliver. He says, I didn't manage to catch Liverpool's Carabao Cup game on Tuesday. Thankfully, it's being repeated on Saturday.
Ah. There we go.
And this is a good one from Tom Smith. He said, this is a belated highlight of the week, but I hope you'll include it. He says, I went to go and watch my beloved Charlton Athletic play away at Gillingham last week and found myself stunned at how utterly atrocious the Gills number 9 was. I realised at half-time that it was none other than Tom Eaves, Luke's unlikely hat-trick hero from the game against Southend a few weeks back. Final score, 1-0 Gillingham. Eaves with the goal.
Lovely. Yeah,
he does that, I tell you. He absolutely does that.
He's effective.
And here's a final one for you from Toby Allen. He says, I'm hoping to see Marcus Speller in the Sainsbury's garage on Lower Richmond Road in Putney at approximately 10:15 this Sunday morning again, browsing through various soaps, shower gels and deodorants. And a Fulham win.
There we are.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
Confirm or deny?
I don't kiss and tell. I don't shower, gel and tell.
Look, Marcus may or may not be there. He's got a friend who works in the BP garage. He sees him a lot.
It's my lookalike. It's my lookalike.
Saddam-style decoy.
If it was 10:15 in the evening, he might have been right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you can't remember where you were 10:15 in the evening, big boy.
So I tell the police. Mm. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. It's an absolute pleasure. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
I'll see you in Sainsbury's local.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.